Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Los Angeles, California, and for more than 20 years was a senior executive helping a series of media companies navigate periods of transformation and growth. Since 2016, he's been the president and CEO of Prison Fellowship Ministries, which is the largest NGO serving the needs of incarcerated men and women, their families, and those returning to society from prison. His name, James Ackerman. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to James Ackerman, who since 2016 has been the president and CEO of Prison Fellowship Ministries. James, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack. It's a real pleasure for me to be a part of your show.
Can we start by talking about your childhood, growing up in La La Land, and your mom and your dad, please?
Sure. People have referred to me as a child of Hollywood royalty. My father has a star in Hollywood Boulevard, primarily because he was the executive producer of many of the sitcoms between the late 50s and early 70s, including Bewitched, Dennis the Menace, Gidget, Flying Nun, Hazel, and many other classic TV shows. And my mother is the actress Eleanor Donoghue, who is best known for her role as the eldest daughter in Father Knows Best, Princess, and Andy Griffith's girlfriend on The Andy Griffith Show, and Felix's girlfriend on The Odd Couple, and many, many other series and movies that she performed in over her lifetime.
What was it like watching your mom and dad, well, at least your mom, on TV?
It was normal. And the reason I say that is I grew up going to private schools in Los Angeles where many of my friends were the children of fill-in-the-blank. It wasn't an uncommon thing to have a parent who was on TV or in the movies or was a producer or director and all of those things. And I would often, my dad was one of those guys who would often go to the studio on the weekend just to prepare for the week ahead. And so I would often, and my brothers and I would often go with him to the studio lots when we were kids. So I remember playing on the back lots of Warner Brothers and Paramount and Burbank Studios and other studio lots here in L.A.
Were there one or two stars or starlets that you said, wow?
Yeah, I mean, Elizabeth Montgomery, who is the star of Bewitched, was very close to our parents. Her husband at the time was Bill Asher, who is the director of most of the Bewitched episodes. And so Bill and my dad were absolute NFL fanatics, and they'd get together often on Sundays to watch football games, and Elizabeth would often come over and hang out with my mother, and I was always super amazed by her.
So what's the biggest thing Mom taught you, and what's the biggest thing Dad taught you?
My dad taught me love. He showed me tremendous love and compassion, and I will... yesterday I was driving from Vail to Denver with another guy. We were at a Christian leadership conference together, and he had rented a car, and we were driving down, and we passed some bison on a hill, and buffaloes were my father's favorite creature, and just seeing them on that hill reminded me of him. And his great love and compassion for me and for people. My mother taught me my speaking skills. I do a lot of public speaking, and my mother taught me how to do this well, how to speak in a way that engages an audience, gets across the message that you want to get across in a clear fashion. So she was a kind of my acting coach.
All right. You then go on, and you have a 25-year career in the entertainment and media industry. Mm-hmm. Talk about that chapter of your life, please.
Well, there's so much to talk about. So I did everything I could to avoid my parents' career. I was hugely intimidated by my father's fame, to be frank. So as a young guy, right out of high school, I signed up to join the United States Coast Guard. And went to boot camp, you know, went in as an enlisted man, served on a search and rescue team, and finished my tenure on Governor's Island, which is an island in the middle of New York Harbor, which at the time was a U.S. Coast Guard base. Today it's a national park. I came to the Lord like a month before my time in the Coast Guard ended, and I decided that if I could find a job in New York City, I would stay, and I did. But the job that I landed was working on the ABC television account for Gray Advertising at a division of Gray called Gray Entertainment Media. So as much as I ran away to go find myself and get away from my parents' career and industry, I found myself right back in it.
From 2009 to 2012, you were the president and CEO of the Documentary Channel, and mm-hmm. you and your team turned it from insolvency to profitability. How'd you do it?
You know, the Documentary Channel was a really amazing experience for me. We were, by this point, living in Nashville, and just, you know, backing up, my career started in New York City, and then I married my wife, Martha, and we had our children. We moved to London, England, and then San Francisco, and then Nashville, Tennessee. And while in Nashville, I was recruited onto the board of Documentary Channel. It was headquartered there. And about a year later, the downturn happened in 2008. And in the spring of 2009, I was asked to take over as the leader of Documentary Channel and take it through a turnaround. And, you know, our options were pretty limited. We either would have to file for bankruptcy or we had to find a way out of the mess that we were in. And by God's grace, we were able to bring in a new investor that gave us the runway we needed to increase our distribution, which we doubled in the course of a year. And in doubling our distribution, meaning the satellite and cable operators that carried the channel, we were able to increase our advertising revenue very substantially, and that took us into profitability. So in May of 2009 is when April or May of 2009 is when I became the CEO of Documentary Channel, and in June or July of 2010, we turned our first profit. And for every month from that point on until we sold the company 2 years later, we produced a cash profit, which was pretty awesome. We sold the company to Participant Media, which is a production company, media company founded by Jeff Skoll, who's the co-founder of eBay. They are behind many films that people will know, like Lincoln and The Help, etc. And that transaction closed in the summer of 2012.
We're talking to James Ackerman, who also founded Spinnaker Media, which developed innovative entertainment and digital media companies. When we come back, we're going to ask them about the future of TV and how we'll receive content. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WGR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasul, and with James Ackerman. James, the future of TV and how we will all receive content. Your thoughts, please.
So the future of TV is, the future is kind of now, but the future of TV is really personalized. And so, when I was a boy, there were three TV channels. There was ABC, CBS, and NBC. And then later came the independents, and then later came cable TV. But there was still limited choice, and everything was bundled together as a package. Today, media is all about, and the future of media, is all about personalization. What is the content that I want personally, and how do I gain access to that specific content? And so You are seeing today content being distributed both through micro-subscription and through advertising-supported platforms, content distributed through applications, if you will. So, in a sense, Netflix is a big application that is available across multiple platforms. I can get it through Apple TV. I can get it through Roku. I can get it through my smart TV from say, Samsung and all the other consumer electronics manufacturers. I can get it on my iPhone. I can get it on my Android. And pay $10 a month and get the content that is available to me through Netflix. But I also, if I specifically want to subscribe to a particular sport or a particular news channel, I can do that as well. And that is called over the top. And that's what we're seeing today. So HBO Go and HBO Now are examples of content being distributed over the top. HBO Now is a pure over-the-top play where I can just subscribe to that, and HBO Go is what's called TV Everywhere, which is I subscribe to HBO, say, through DirecTV or Comcast, but I also have it accessible through my computer or my phone or my tablet or whatever.
I quote you now, James Ackerman. By 2004, work had become my god. Explain that, and then what happened?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing. I think we carry things so I'm an adult convert to Christianity. I grew up going to All Saints Episcopal Church in Beverly Hills, but I never really understood the premise of having a relationship with the living God through Jesus Christ. That's something that came to me as an adult about a month before I left the Coast Guard, so I was 22 years old at this point. But there was some baggage I carried with me into adulthood that I didn't even know was there. And so as I went through my early career, which went very well, it kind of masked some of that baggage. And that baggage was really related to wanting people to admire and love me, right? And I didn't really need to worry about it because my career was going well, and I got a lot of admiration from people. And so that was never an issue. But I took up the leadership of Open TV at a time when the bloom was coming off the rose of the internet era. This is mid-2000. And then 9/11 happened in 2001. It was a massive economic downturn. And I didn't even notice it was happening, but my focus shifted from focusing on the Lord in my work to focusing on myself and my own significance. And unfortunately, when I got focused on myself and my own significance, it took me down a path that started to break every relationship in my life. So my marriage was coming unglued. My role as a father was not good and just not existent. I mean, I pretty much wasn't there. I think in the 4 years I led Open TV, I counted that I took the kids to school 3 times. That's crazy. And I wasn't doing anything to serve my community. I wasn't involved in my church, any of those things. And Martha, my wife, recognized this, and so did a bunch of my friends. And she said, you need to spend more time with your son, who at this point is 9 or 10 years old. And she signed us up for a father-son retreat at Mount Hermon in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Mount Hermon is a Christian retreat center.
And you and your son, Holden, shared a cabin with Dick Paulson and his son. Talk to us about Dick Paulson, and what did he talk to you about?
So I'm a big believer in divine appointments, and God had one for us, for me, that weekend. As you mentioned, our cabin mates were Dick Paulson and his son, Jeff. And Jeff and Holden were about the same age, and they got along terrifically. And Dick was the development director for Prison Fellowship on the West Coast. And he began talking to me about the work of Prison Fellowship and Chuck Colson, who I knew a little bit about, but not a lot. And and I said to him that I had gone to a church in London when we lived in England that had a robust prison ministry. That church was Holy Trinity Brompton, which, in fact, was the founder of the Alpha Course. And I said I'd always had an interest in prison ministry, but I'd never made the time to do anything about it. And Dick said, well, I can fix that. I said, what do you mean? He said, let me take you to prison. And so he did. So we went to visit a prison together, a prison fellowship academy, this one in Iowa, and it just changed me on the day. I couldn't believe it. The thing that I realized, and this should be a statement of the obvious, but it wasn't to me. I don't think it's to a lot of people. But these men that I met that day in prison are people. And just like us, they're people who have hopes, and they have fears, and they have successes, and they have failures. And the verse in Matthew 25 where Jesus talks about the need to visit the imprisoned, visit prisoners, the penny dropped for me, and I realized this is something that I'm being called to do. And so from that point on, I started volunteering with Prison Fellowship in prison.
Speaking of visiting prisoners, you then started to work with a man who had murdered 7 people and was in San Quentin. Tell us about him and what he taught you, James.
So this was, again, one of those just crazy situations that only the Holy Spirit could bring about. I'm sitting in our community group in San Francisco, and a woman says, I have a friend who's been counseling a guy on death row in San Quentin, but he can't do it anymore because of family commitments, and he's wondering if I could help him identify somebody who would be willing to take this over for him. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm down for this. So I started counseling and meeting with this guy pretty much on a monthly basis for about a year and a half, and then corresponded with him for a few years thereafter. I won't say his name. He's still alive. He's still at San Quentin. But he murdered, as you said, 7 people in one night. He was high on drugs and booze, and somebody had convinced him that his wife was sleeping with her boss, and he went and killed everyone associated with them. So so while he was during his trial, a little girl actually saw a news report about him and wrote him a letter about Jesus. And he gave his life to the Lord. But he had nobody to meet with. He didn't know anything about stepping out in faith. And he just needed a person or persons who he could talk to about his journey in faith. So we'd meet and just talk. The first time we met was a harrowing experience for me. I arrived at San Quentin, and you go through multiple security procedures to get into the condemned unit. And he was allowed contact visitation. And so they take you as the visitor into a cage, a cell of sorts, and lock you in it. And then they bring him, fully shackled, bring him into the cage as well, take the shackles off of him, and lock the door. And I thought to myself, have I lost my mind? I mean, I am sitting here across a small table from a man who killed 7 people with his bare hands. But he was a wonderful guy and loved the Lord and had become an evangelist in the prison and was talking to anybody who would listen to him about Jesus. And he just needed a friend. And so that's really where my ministry with Prison Fellowship started.
We're talking to James Ackerman. And on August 1st, 2016, he became the president and CEO of Prison Fellowship Ministries. When we come back, we'll ask him how and why. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with James Ackerman. James, August 1st, 2016, you become president and CEO of Prison Fellowship Ministries. How and why?
Well, let's let's continue to talk about the journey of how I got there, and then we'll talk about the why. So a moment ago, you and I were discussing the start of my ministry on death row in San Quentin. I want to share with you a image of forgiveness that I will never forget as long as I live. So I'm sitting there with my guy, and we're talking, and we've now been meeting for several months. And I said to him, you know, almost every time I'm here, that guy across the in the cell across the aisle from us, big, like 6'5" white guy, is meeting with an elderly woman. I said, is that his mother? He said, no, that's not his mother, but sort of. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, that's the mother of the 14-year-old girl that he raped and murdered. And now she's made him her son. When Jesus comes into a very broken and painful situation, transformation happens. And what had happened in that situation was a man who committed a heinous act that put him on death row was forgiven by the mother of the girl against whom he committed that act. And not only that, but she made him her son, meaning that she met with him every week as often as she could to just love on him. And to me, that's where the greatest transformation started to happen in my life, is I realized that I had made my work the greatest priority in my life and my significance through work the greatest priority in my life, but there was a greater priority, and that was serving the community around me and using the gifts and skills and talents that God had given me and experiences to invest in the lives of other people. After I left Open TV, we stayed in San Francisco for about a year, but then we ultimately sold our house there and moved to Nashville, Tennessee. My best friend had been living in Nashville for about 13 years at the time, and he encouraged us to take a look at it, and we made the decision to move there. And one of the first things I did is I cold called the maximum security prison closest to Nashville, Tennessee, called Riverbend Maximum Security. It's where Tennessee's death row is. And they connected me with the chaplain there, and he said, well, I told him what I had been doing on death row in San Quentin. We had just moved to Nashville. He said, well, come on in. Let me show you around. Let's talk. And so we sat down and had a nice conversation in the prison. And he said, what would you like to do? How would you like to volunteer? And I said, well, you know, I've been a Christian since I was 22. I could lead a Bible study. I go to, you know, this great church in Nashville. I could probably get together a group of people to come in and lead worship services. He said, let me stop you. I said, okay. He said, this is Nashville. There is a church on every corner. I've got a Bible study and a worship service happening in this prison every night. I don't need another one. But you're a business guy, and what I need is somebody who can help teach these men how to write a resume, how to conduct themselves in a job interview, how to write a household budget, how to come up with a five-year plan. Can you help us do that? I said, you bet. He goes, we've just started a program here in Tennessee called pre-release for people that are coming up for parole consideration, and we need somebody in that program to teach these kinds of skills. And so for three or four of the next 7 years, I came into that prison every week at 7:30 in the morning to teach my life skills class to a group of 12 men at a time. And it was the highlight of my week. In the first year of leading the Turnaround Documentary Channel, I had to sort of put it on the shelf because I was just super focused on that. But once we got stable, I started going back in again. And I'm telling you, I would get up super early, get ready, drive out to the prison, go through this at Riverbend. You have to go through seven doors to finally get to the classroom where I teach my life skills class. And then finish the class, get my car, go to my office in Nashville. And I'm telling you, there are few things that were greater highlight in my week than that experience.
You said a couple of months ago that when Jesus comes into your life is transformed. A shining example of that was the late, great Chuck Colson, the founder of Prison Fellowship in 1976. Tell us about Chuck Colson, please.
Oh, he was such a great man. He was Chuck had two great passions. The first was serving the needs of the incarcerated and their families. Chuck, as you know, went to prison for a crime related to Watergate. He was in the White House as a special counsel to President Nixon. Just before going to prison, the then CEO of Raytheon led him to the Lord. He actually gave his life to the Lord in the driveway of that CEO's house. And you can read all about this in Chuck's book, Born Again. I strongly recommend it if you haven't, if your listeners have not read the book. And Chuck went to prison. He came out of prison and had this vision that these men and women are amongst the most marginalized in society, and we need to create a Christian organization that is designed to help men and women experience the Christian faith, step into the Christian faith, walk in the Christian faith, and become healthier and more productive citizens. His other great passion was biblical worldview. And so Chuck started something called the Centurions Program, today is known as the Colson Fellows Program. And I signed up on the encouragement of a neighbor for the Centurions Program and was accepted and went through and graduated from the second class of the Centurions Program. And the Centurions Program is a deep dive on biblical worldview. Chuck felt very strongly that men and women needed to be equipped to speak truth, biblical truth, in the marketplace of ideas, whether that was in government or in business or related to lightning rod issues of our time or just in how society should operate, to be able to speak from a biblically centric worldview. And Chuck was a big believer in being winsome in doing so. In other words, he'd look at some of what's said today, and I think his heart would just grieve for the aggressive way in which the Christian faith is sometimes presented in the marketplace of ideas and politics today. But his whole thing was be winsome and be humble and to engage society in a way that people could relate to and understand and have a conversation around.
42 years later, Prison Fellowship is the largest faith-based NGO serving the needs of incarcerated men and women, their families, and those returning to society, and it's currently active in 428 prisons across America. You've started a while ago Prison Fellowship Academy. Can you tell us about that, please, James?
Yeah, so the Prison Fellowship Academy is our most intensive program that we have in prison today. Prison Fellowship Academy exists in 87 prisons in 27 states today, and it is a year-long program that men or women sign up and apply to be part of. There's a lot of work. It's very intensive, and the Academy is designed to address the criminogenic thinking and behavior of men and women in prison through biblically-centric curriculum and the gospel. And so we disclose to everyone who comes into the academy, and when they apply, we accept anybody of any faith or no faith background at all, but everything that we teach is grounded in biblical worldview. And so there are four pillars to the academy. The first is unpacking the 101 of the Christian faith, and we do this through Alpha, which I referred to earlier, to help people see life differently, that God has a purpose and plan for your life, and to help you step into that. The second pillar is what I call the first cousins of one's criminal history, and that's things like addiction issues, anger management issues, etc. And to this end, we actually partnered with Celebrate Recovery, because there's 30,000 Celebrate Recovery chapters on the outside. So if addiction issues were at the core of your criminal history and you grapple with that while you're in prison, we can hand you off to a Celebrate Recovery chapter on the outside where you can continue that journey. The third is relationships. The vast majority of men, not all, but the vast majority of men in prison grew up in a household with no father figure or an unhealthy father figure. The vast majority of women, and I'm talking greater than 80% of women in prison, have suffered abuse at the hands of a man. So we help men and women understand what healthy relationships look like. What does it mean to be a good husband, to be a good father? What are the boundaries women need to put around themselves in relationships, etc.? And then last, practical life skills like I used to teach at Riverbend. So how to go about looking for a job, how to write your household budget, things of that kind. So that's the Prison Fellowship Academy, and it's a beautiful thing. One of the things that we have now, that our oldest academy is 22 years old. Our newest academy launched, in mid-September. So the but what you see, particularly for the academies that have existed for a while in a prison, they begin to change the culture of the whole prison. Because while some of the men and women who graduate from the academy will soon be released back into society, some do not, and they become advocates of hope and peace in the prison itself.
We're talking to James Ackerman. If you want to learn more, www.prisonfellowship.org. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to James Ackerman. Since 2016, he's been the president and CEO of Prison Fellowship. If you want to learn more, www.prisonfellowship.org. James, what's the biggest thing these prisoners have taught you?
They have taught me that Jesus is real. When you see a guy who goes to prison for murder, who becomes a transformed person in Christ Jesus, it is an incredible thing. I've met men and women in prison who are bright, capable, competent, and should have been enormously productive, positive contributors to society, but unfortunately used their gifts in a very negative way that resulted in them finding themselves in prison. But finding themselves in prison became the thing that saved their lives, and they come out of prison and become incredible contributors. 25% of Prison Fellowship's field staff spent a meaningful amount of time in prison. Five members of our staff took a person's life.
Wow. Tell us about the Angel Tree programs.
Thank you for raising that. We've been talking so much about our work in prison, but equally, Chuck saw the importance of serving the needs of the families of incarcerated men and women. In the mid-80s, we brought on board a program called Angel Tree, which was founded by a woman named Mary Kay Beard, who at one point was on the FBI's most wanted list. And Angel Tree is a program today whereby volunteers, mainly through churches, purchase and deliver Christmas gifts to the children of incarcerated moms and dads on their behalf. So we go into prisons all over the country and have parents sign up their children, and then volunteers go out and purchase that gift and deliver the message from their parent and the gospel to those children all across the country. Last year, we served 284,000 children in all 50 states, and given the sign-ups that we're seeing this year, we think we're going to exceed 300,000 children this year. But now we've taken Angel Tree and we've expanded it to become a year-round thing. So we now send children of incarcerated parents to sleepover camp. Last summer, we sent just over 9,000 children to sleepover camps in the country, to accredited Christian camps. We don't run camps ourselves. We send them to established Christian camps where they hear the gospel, but they get to see the great outdoors, and they go canoeing and do all the things that one does at camp. And then more recently, we've started an initiative called the Angel Tree Sports Clinic, where we partner with professional alumni associations like the NFL Alumni Association to run sports clinics. So we hold football clinics, for example, with former NFL stars and former NFL coaches to teach kids, primarily middle school and high school kids, pro-class football skills and share with them the gospel of Jesus Christ. What's the purpose of all this? I'll quote Chuck. He used to say, crime is a family business. If you want to see the next generation of criminals, just look at the current generation of criminals. Angel Tree, in all of its forms, is designed to break that, to give kids hope, and to pivot their perspective on what their life can be all about.
If there's a listener tonight that says, James, I really admire you and your volunteers, etc., but I don't really care about the prisoners, and if I did, what can I do?
Well, one, I'd encourage you to read Matthew 25. Just read the whole thing. And when you get to verses 34 and 35 and 36 and onward, it may change your mind about the importance of caring for prisoners. For those who do care about prisoners, one, everyone can pray for us, and please do. Prisons can be incredibly dark places, but they can also be, they are also places of tremendous renewal and hope. But we go into prisons every day, our staff go into prisons every day. Please shower them in prayer cover. Further, there's ways you can volunteer. You can go to prisonfellowship.org to check out the ways you can volunteer. For example, you can sign up as an advocacy volunteer and to contact your congressman or senator about things that are related to prison reform and sentencing reform and things of this kind. And then third, we don't take a dollar from government. We are supported exclusively by individuals, foundations, and some corporations. So if you are moved to support our work, please go to prisonfellowship.org and donate.
If there's a parent tonight, a spouse, or a child of an incarcerated person, what do you say to them, James?
Don't give up hope. Encourage your partner, husband, wife, brother, son, daughter, whomever it may be, to use the time in prison to become healthy. Go to the church services that are available into the prison. Sign up for the programming that's available into the prison. If a prison fellowship academy is there, apply to go through the academy. If there's a Celebrate Recovery chapter in the prison, become part of the Celebrate Recovery chapter, because everybody has hurts, hang-ups, and habits. And so, and just don't give up hope. And invest in your children's lives and ask the community to help invest in your children's lives to help them move down a path that is different than maybe the one they had come from.
James Ackerman, you are a shining example of the fact that God does not tweak, He transforms.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for all you do. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Prisula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.